With the human eyes, is there a way to differentiate a deep fake video from a real video just with the human eyes?
Yeah, so to your broad question, the answer today is actually yes. And I was contributing to a DHS white paper about this last year that you can find online. And there were two primary methods that we called out or were called out in that paper. So method number one was that the sides, so like your left side and your right side, were not necessarily capable of being reproduced on a fully accurate basis by a deepfake. And number two was reflections in your eyes in particular. So the glint of different reflections when you have different colors in front of you was not something that deepfakes were actually capable of reproducing.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Everything AI and Lore podcast with Tolu Lokpe Awoyomi, Tolu for short. And today I'm so thrilled to have here with me Neil. And Neil is a super genius. He holds multiple patents in machine learning, security, and he is one of the leading voices in AI. And I'm so, so happy to have you here, Neil. Hi, Neil. How you doing?
Hey, doing well. Glad to be on, Tolu. Look forward to the conversation.
Yeah, great. Same here. So let's start with Calypso AI. Can you tell me about it and why you started it?
Yeah, 100%. When we think about the future of AI, the word that really comes to mind for me is democratization. We see a future where everyone is leveraging AI, is leveraging AI agents to be able to make their lives easier, to be able to solve painful tasks at work, and ultimately to be able to make themselves more and more productive. Obviously, the more technology is democratized, the more people have access to it, the greater the challenges from a risk perspective, from a security perspective, from a control and cost perspective. And the enterprise of the future, the enterprise of today, needs a way to be able to secure, manage, and control all of these agents and all of these models running across the enterprise. And that's what we do at Calypso AI. And the original inspiration for the company was really simple. I had the chance to spend some time at the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency over 5 years ago now. And they had so much data that obviously AI or deep learning was kind of necessary in order to be able to analyze and understand all of that data. And the real concern was really on the security and the adversarial machine learning side of the house, or the kind of attacking of AI models side of the house. And there was no real solution to kind of ensuring the security of models. And that's why we started Calypso.
Wow, that's amazing. And I really like the fact that you said democratization of AI, because it's one of the mission of this podcast to democratize AI knowledge for lawyers and also help AI engineers, researchers, and company to understand and build better responsible AI systems. So talking about AI security and machine learning security, how secure is AI? How much of trust can we give to AI?
I mean, from a dictionary definition of security, and then we can kind of talk about a kind of wider ranging question around kind of ethics or AI trust. From a pure security perspective, it's like any other technology. It's impossible to ensure the security of any technology to 100%. The cybersecurity industry is all about risk reduction, and different use cases, different situations require differential amounts of risk reduction. AI is no different than that. And from a kind of broader kind of AI ethics standpoint, I think you really run into issues around what are the ethical systems that we want to align to? What are the ethics that we believe in? How do the ethics differ from country to country to country? And how can we build systems that are in alignment with that?
Right. So who builds this ethics?
Who builds these ethics? Well, ultimately, it's folks that are actually building the underlying foundation models that power AI. So things like Anthropic, Cohere, Llama 2, and so on and so forth. And then it's folks that are potentially fine-tuning models on top of these open source models, and then the folks that are building guardrails on top of that. That's the answer from a who's building perspective. From the perspective of who's defining, it's a multi-stakeholder problem, from your government policymakers to your private corporations, to your think tanks and nonprofits, to society at large.
So how do we draw that balance between safeguarding these AI systems in terms of legislating and also not trying to stifle innovation?
I think that's the trillion-dollar question. And I say trillion dollars because the societal impact of AI is in excess of many, many trillions of dollars. There are different approaches that different regulators are taking. I think it makes most sense to kind of compare and contrast the approach that the EU is taking versus the approach that the US is taking. So the EU has come out with the EU AI Act. And I think the belief of a lot of policymakers in Brussels is that you almost need regulation to be in front of technology. So you need to regulate for the future in order to prevent harms from happening. Whereas the approach in the US is that regulation should follow technology progress and technology innovation, and that there is some risk associated with doing that, but the risk of not being at the forefront of these technologies is even greater than that.
So what approach do you prefer?
What approach do I prefer? It's a really great question. I think for me, it gets back down to the kind of broader societal question of how do we think that, what role do we think that AI plays in society? And why do we think it matters? For me, it's really simple. Since the Industrial Revolution, technology progress has been the primary driver of economic growth in society. We went from land being the primary driver of economic growth, and the more people you had on a piece of land, the lower the GDP per cap was, to a society where, for all intents and purposes, progress in GDP growth was infinite as technology advanced and matured. And one of the things that we've seen in the United States has been that since 2004, we've had no labor productivity growth, meaning that labor productivity has been the same from 2004 to 2012 to 2018, to the data set that I'm pulling from is from 2019. It's from a Fed report then. And the question then becomes, why does per capita GDP growth occur? Why is GDP growth occurring? And the reason is really simply that GDP growth isn't actually tied to underlying progress or underlying societal growth. It's non-real GDP growth for all intents and purposes. And for the first time, we have the ability with AI to be able to actually massively increase labor productivity and thus increase societal benefit. And the best approach to getting there is one that I'm really, really curious to see. And I think we have this absolutely fascinating kind of A-B comparison between the US and Europe in terms of seeing what approach will actually be better for societies at large.
Yeah, I'm also curious to see it. Let's see. Okay, so now deepfakes and replicable human voices, such as the voice engine by OpenAI. Is it scary and the threats, the risks? I mean, I would like to hear from you.
Yeah, great question. I think that it gets down to this question of what is trust And what do we use to understand and assign veracity? So historically, the human voice has been something that we've all been able to match. We all have, to a large degree, very unique vocal fingerprints, and we've had the ability to be able to differentiate identity to a large degree based on the way that people look, based on the way that people sound. Obviously, with non-100% accuracy, but a fairly high level of accuracy. And now we don't. And so the question becomes, how do we create new systems that allow us to trust certain documents, that allow us to trust certain, not necessarily the voice themselves, but the way that the voice is occurring? In other words, that allow us to trust the phone number or allow us to trust the associated metadata that we're getting from the source of information.
So, how do we do that?
So how do we do that? Well, we redefine society. We redefine all of the systems that we use for trust. We move to a new schema. Estonia actually is probably, from a nation-state perspective, the furthest along in terms of kind of redefining what societal trust, societal identification means in a kind of AI future. And we move away from trusting the actual input to trusting the metadata around that, whether that metadata is someone calling from a number where we've been able to verify that that is a real reflection of that person, to a document where we, whether it's via like a homomorphic encryption mechanism or it's via some other mechanism, have the ability to ensure the veracity of that document.
So, ensuring the veracity of the metadata now, would it be like using AI to fight AI or to combat AI?
I think that's one method that you could certainly use, and potentially has a lot of validity. There are other methods, including using the blockchain, so like WorldCoin, just as an example, that are also aiming to solve this problem of how do you create decentralized but accurate mechanisms for trust.
So, with the human eyes, is there a way to differentiate a deep fake video from a real video just with the human eyes?
Yeah, so to your broad question, the answer today is actually yes. And I was contributing to a DHS white paper about this last year that you can find online. And there were two primary methods that we called out or were called out in that paper. So method number one was that the sides, so like your left side and your right side, didn't necessarily were not necessarily capable of being reproduced on a fully accurate basis by a deepfake. And number two was reflections in your eyes in particular. So the glint of different reflections when you have different colors in front of you was not something that deepfakes were actually capable of reproducing.
Oh, so if the deep fake can turn to the left, it wouldn't be real, right?
If it can't.
It can't turn to the left. Okay.
Correct.
Was
And
it?
yeah,
Yeah,
please.
keep going, keep going. Sorry.
And it had to do with the kind of structure of the data that was being used and the structure of kind of representation of the sides of the body. Now, my expectation is that will probably go away as a method to be able to differentiate between deepfakes and non-deepfakes probably in the next 6 to 9 months. But that has been a method that's worked fairly well from kind of the invention of generative adversarial networks, which are the underlying technical mechanism of deepfakes, up until now.
So recently, was it I think last month I saw HeyGen. Have you heard about HeyGen? So they released a video of the man talking with hand gestures. I think he turned to the left or right, if I can remember. So is that Does that mean that the sideways of deepfakes is gradually going away because it's getting more sophisticated?
So you have a half-life associated with it, but the HeyGen demo didn't actually showcase the full proportionality on the sides of the body. If you actually paid attention to it, it looked a little bit more almost stick figure-like when you were looking at the sides.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay, so it's... So what... I want you to paint an imagery of how the future with AI would look like now, with everything coming on the technology. What do you think, or how do you see the future with AI? Because it's going to redefine a lot of things about human living and everything. So can you paint an imagery for us?
Yeah. So I think we probably want to start with biology, and then we probably want to work our way up from there. So obviously CRISPR has been one of the kind of major scientific discoveries of the last 12 years or so. And CRISPR has been based on effectively the Cas9 biological, effectively like gene. And there are a couple of really, really interesting things that we've seen with AI and leveraging CRISPR. One has been that we've been able to identify more and more kind of explanations for specific parts of our genome. And we have the ability to be able to, at a much, much faster pace, have customizable drugs and customizable medicine on an individual basis, powered by our understanding of the human genome, powered by CRISPR, and powered by our use of AI. And so you can imagine kind of a future of highly, highly customizable medicine that's individualized to every single person and based on their genetic profile and based on the environmental conditions that they have. You work your way up the stack and you can see a future where, you know, a vast majority of the tasks that take time, from the really, really simple things like transcribing this podcast at the end of it to even potentially recording this podcast, are done leveraging AI, to a future where with like virtual humans, you even start to get into a future society where there is kind of integration of AI agents and human beings. Your boss in the future could be an AI system. The direct reports that you have, a percentage of them could be AI agents as well. And the kind of nature of what it means to be human in our kind of society today completely changes.
So how worried should we be about AGI? How soon is it going to be? And the singularity versus human importance? I mean, because there's a lot of fear about AI taking lots of jobs. So how is that balance? How's that going to be like?
Yeah, it's a really, really good question, and kind of an obvious question. On the AGI side of the house, I think there are a lot of different perspectives. The question really ends up being, how well do our approaches today scale? So do we have the ability to continue to scale our kind of current transformer architecture with kind of HRLS approach? And if we have the ability to scale that ad infinitum, then potentially the future is relatively soon, as well as kind of getting into the definition of what exactly is AGI. There are multiple definitions. And then if that approach doesn't necessarily work just as well, or if we run into a point of diminishing returns, then the time horizon is probably a little bit further out. So that would be kind of your AGI question. And then the kind of job or societal displacement question. I think what it really is this question of how do we get into more and more of the things that are kind of uniquely human and uniquely incapable of being done by AI. You know, one of my favorite advertisements or sets of advertisements are if you look at some old archives of the New York Times from kind of, let's say, 1916, 1917, 1918, you'll see a lot of advertisements that promise that items are guaranteed to be machine made, because being machine made rather than handmade was an incredible source of value. It was more precise, it was more accurate. And yet, as machine made items became increasingly commoditized in the ensuing decades, we've now seen this kind of inversion of that. And we've seen the desires of human beings have massively changed.
Wow. Okay, so would you suggest reskilling of the workforce to focus more on what is uniquely inherent in humans? So if you were to advise on going forward, so to avoid like job displacement and unemployment, what are like 5 steps you could give or advice?
Yeah. So one, really, really emphasizing the ability to bring together disparate, thoughts, effectively human biomimicking, and the ability to almost learn how to think, in addition to actually learning a specific set of skills, better understand what are the kind of underlying intellectual framework that defines something or doesn't define something, would be one. Two is sort of having that understanding or that emphasis on something that is unique to a human being, whether that is a field like medicine or law or a hyper-specialized field, and sort of becoming the like subject matter expert on that really, really specific topic or on that really specific field. Three is obviously recognizing that like the nature of one career for a whole human lifetime is probably not one that we're going to continue to see. You're probably going to have many, many different careers throughout your lifetime. Four is just being inherently adaptable. And then five is kind of just understanding what are the things that you are uniquely well positioned to do, that you're uniquely good at, and being aware of that and not kind of doing the same exact thing without any kind of either mindset or practical growth.
Right. Thank you. Spot on. So I know you're not a lawyer, but you work in AI security. So what do you think are the legal issues that are associated with AI technology?
I think they're all of the questions that are associated with law today, just transposed to a future where you have AI as well.
So like privacy, copyright, and everything. Okay, so this is a random question. What advice would you give to lawyers in terms of AI or understanding AI or democratization of AI?
Well, so one, and you know, this one is probably one that anyone that kind of listens or follows your podcast is already engaged with. But, you know, don't have your head in the sand. Try to understand the technology as well as you can. Play with it. Use it, understand it, wrap your hands kind of around AI in it and as much as you can. Two is, you know, potentially from a longer term perspective, depending on where in the legal profession you sit, try to understand what are the things that are unlikely to be capable of having AI play a role in, and what are the workflows or what are the things that you do where AI is going to play a role, and differentiate between the two. So in camp number one, it's unlikely that AI will ever be able to go into a court of law, for example, or be able to argue a case. And in case number two, can you use AI in some way, shape, or form as part of your practice? to automate systems, to speed up the rate at which you are able to deliver results. And in some sense, the future is probably one where both the amount of work necessary for a piece of legal filing or for a legal action is going to be a lot lower than it is today, meaning the amount of time it takes to do paperwork is going to be smaller today than it will be in the future. But also, the amount of paperwork will probably go up as more and more people have the ability to use the legal system in both positive and not so positive ways as the kind of costs go down.
Well, thank you so much, Neil. So, what advice would you give to someone who wants to know about AI and eventually become an expert? How do they start?
I think the simplest answer, and actually the right answer, is ask an AI system that question. Obviously, it gets down to the question of what specifically do you want to understand about AI? Where exactly do you want to play within the AI stack? And one of the real benefits of our current architecture is you can quite literally ask a model like ChatGPT that question and have a highly personalized response.
Wow. Spot on as always. Okay, any closing thoughts, remarks, or anything?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Really enjoyed the podcast, and I hope you and your audience has a really great day ahead.
Thank you so much, Neil, for coming. Take care, and till next time, guys, just subscribe, follow to be notified of subsequent episodes. Thank you so much. See you. Bye.